was mainly mentioned to promote Bob and to saying something, given that a lot of what I'm going to say is based on his work and the some of the framework for the conference, I think, among the philosophers have been set by reactions to Bob's book, although that probably hasn't been apparent to the physicists. But in any case, there's a question about how to characterize emergence that we've kept circling around. And there are a few different issues that come up. One is whether if you have two theories and you want to characterize a set of phenomena or laws as emergence with respect to the more base level theory. There have been various ways of characterizing that. I want to focus on two. One is a sort of question about a relation of deducibility between the two, whether you can deduce the emergent phenomena from the base level theory. And another is a question of explanatory relationships, whether you can explain the emergent phenomena in terms of base level theory. So I think one of the reasons why we've been talking past one another to some degree is that both of those questions of deducibility or explanatory relations depend upon what you mean by how can you derive one theory from another, or what an explanation amounts to. And I think the philosophers often have a fairly restrictive sense of what they mean when they say that higher level phenomena could be deducible from a low level theory, or explained in terms of that low level theory. Whereas I think the physicists have a much richer set of things that they allow in terms of that relationship. So in particular, a lot of the philosophical talks, let's take an example of emergent phenomena where you say something like the phase structure emerges only in the thermodynamic limit. That's something that I think for most physicists, you could say that's derivable from a lower level theory. You can understand it in terms of this thermodynamic limit. But for a lot of the philosophical accounts of derivability or explanatory relations, those sorts of limits are taken as being problematic. So that you can't explain features of the emergent phenomena if they involve that sort of limits. And one of the things that Bob emphasized in his book is that philosophers should be more liberal in this sense and allow those sorts of explanations. So I think that's one of the ways in which we've been talking about the past in this sense. Another question I want to put on the table is just, regardless of what you think of that, there might be a set of questions, explanatory questions, that you can only ask at the level of the higher level emergent phenomena. And that's another issue that Bob emphasized. There might be a question about, say, the robustness of phenomena, the robustness of scaling behaviors that certain substances exhibit near criticality. That sort of question seems to be something that's well posed at the level of the emergent phenomena and not at the level of the base phenomena. Now, that doesn't mean that for each of the different substances you look at, you couldn't derive the behavior that they'll exhibit near criticality with sufficient computational power and so on. It just seems that there's a way in which you can answer that question much more directly, namely by saying that the Hamiltonian for this system is one that falls under the basin of attraction of the renormalization group flow that takes it to a certain fixed point, and then you can describe this universal phenomena in those ways without actually knowing that much about this Hamiltonian other than the fact that it falls within the basin of attraction of this fixed point. So the second point is that there seem to be some explanatory questions. A lot of them are ones that we've been discussing at this meeting that look like they do invoke things that are properly formulated at the level of the brain phenomena. So that was my attempt to provoke Bob, although I don't know if he's provoked by that. In any case,
that was a really good statement what he said. But I'm happy to elaborate on anybody wants. Maybe before we get into that, just to see if anybody else wants.
I have to apologize in front. I'm not sure if I will order myself properly because I have a feeling I'm meeting with many more questions than I write.
Speak up.
So what I think is what I noticed that when it comes to the whole question of the existence and the robustness of effective field theories, it kind of seems to me it's part of a bigger question, and that is basically why can we do anything? And that is, in my opinion, that's quite a big question. What I realize is, of course, not everything is an emergent theory. Or we don't even know what emergence means, but we disagree, you know, this whole concept of emergence. Then Philip pointed out, actually, not everything is emergent. We also have, you know, major words like we live in the beginning. It's not so easy, not so simple. Lee would say, you know, maybe the way we do physics is completely wrong, maybe the laws of physics are changing. So everything seems to be a question again. And what I just think is, like, I'm very thankful that physics works this way, because what I realized when I started doing experiments, there was this moment where I set up this experiment and I made all these terrible approximations. And as a theorist, I thought, okay, this must be all very, very bad. And then you do the data analysis and then it works so beautifully. And the only thing I could think at the very moment was, why does it work after all these approximations? And I think for me, something like that is how physics is. And that is magically, we can work, for example, with, for hundreds of years, people would work with Newtonian gravity, and it worked so well, yet it was, you know, just like a part of the truth. So I really don't know why, but thankfully physics works.
I just want to say that what I'm taking away from this workshop, from the physics talks, is a rich set of examples which have been presented in a nice way where, and of course the 20-minute talk, as I learned, is very short, but the talks have been presented, a rich set of examples in a sort of nicely accessible way. I have lots to go away and think about, and a much broader perspective on what the range of interesting examples is from a whole number of different domains. In particular, nice examples of analogies, which is something that I'm quite interested in, independently of Limbridge's budget. So that's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
So when I started the conference, I thought that either I already knew what emergence was, or in the worst case scenario, that very quickly everybody would agree upon it. And it seemed that with the time there are more and more bifurcations. And in fact, I would like to propose another bifurcation. Which, I mean, maybe it's not a pure bifurcation, it's another angle of view. And so usually when people talk about emergence, they love to start with this point of view that we have some basic fundamental laws that are very simple. But when you put together many parties, many bodies that interact with these very simple laws, you get higher levels of complexity. So this is also the point of view of Anderson, who talks of a hierarchy of sciences that are more and more complex, and in which, even though the original laws are followed still by these more complex systems, nevertheless, that you don't see, you cannot describe them just in terms of those laws. You require other concepts, and many body theory advocates breaking of symmetry is the main concept. So typically emergence is seen as the emergence of the complex from the simple. Nevertheless, in all these days we've seen that one of the important things about an emergent phenomenon is that it is robust or independent of the details. So if we look at this very carefully, this means that the underlying theory, which is already an effective theory, because when we have a full model, a Hamiltonian for describing, I don't know, magnetism or the spin liquid, it is already an effective theory, because it's not like we're writing all the interactions between all the possible atoms and electrons. Maybe the toy model may be simple, but the fact that we say that there is some emergence that is a phenomenon that is robust means that the real underlying theory can be as messy as you want, right? It means that you have perturbations, a disorder, and within a certain range, nothing really changes. So from this point of view, you see that the emergent phenomenon is very simple, maybe it's magic, it's very simple. But the underlying theory can be incredibly complicated. So I would like to propose the point of view that emergence is maybe the emergence of simplicity. And so this could be even be the point of view of the emergence of fundamental particles. Like from the talk of Professor Bhaskaran, we saw that from a bosonic model, you can have emergent fermions or the emergent gauge fields. And we usually say, oh, elementary particles and gauge fields have such simple laws. But if they are emergent from an ether or from a field, let me call it, the real theory can be incredibly messy, and the simplicity is emerging. So if this were true, it's true that the probing at smaller and smaller scales, instead of finding simplicity, we find more and more complication. This really changes the outlook of how we should do science, because the reductionist paradigm is based on the fact that in the end we find that the simplest building blocks of nature, but maybe the simplest, it's a logical possibility that this also relied on some toy models, that the simple building blocks are at some level that is that is already emergent, and it is beyond that we don't have to go, because it's not invisible.
I wanted to express a point of view which hadn't been expressed much here, but Philip, I think, would find this congenial, and so would Nancy Cartwright. One of the reasons when you get to larger scales, you get to simplicity, is because we engineer that simplicity. What we mean by material is something with uniform properties over large distances. So if you you piled up a little of this, a little of that, and mixed it all up so that it wasn't quite mixed up, and you had all kinds of mess, it wouldn't be so simple. And particle physicists look often at situations in which they're trying to examine a few particles at a time. General relativists are here talking about things that emerge as you get to the edges of a hypothetical universe, flat one. And this simplicity is in part manufactured, I believe. So maybe life is complicated at both ends. Both the small end and the large end really have a complication, and we only engineer in the apparent simplicity at the large scale end.
I'd also be really wary of characterizing things in terms of simplicity, because it's so
important.
I'd be wary of characterizing these things in terms of simplicity, because I think it's a notoriously slippery notion. For one thing, Navier-Stokes equations, well, they're the nice simple continuum equations that only have a couple of parameters that describe the smeared out stuff, but they're pretty gosh darn complicated when you start to worry about turbulence and things like that. So I wonder whether that's the best way to think about whether the simplicity is the best way to characterize the emergent levels there are. But I take your point. There's something.
I could even try to make my point clear, but maybe could be that there could be some definition of simplicity that rely on computer science definitions. Like, if you stop thinking, you just do brute force calculations. What is the complexity class of some problems? They also.
For the record, there is another sense of emergence that gets talked about in philosophical literature, sometimes called weak emergence, which is supposed to be the sense in which a system is weakly emergent if you're trying to calculated or simulated it, basically. You actually have to run it step by step. So it's a dynamical notion, you know, very much related to the notion of algorithmic compressibility or the failure of algorithmic compressibility. So that's a sense of emergence in which is very much tied to prediction, but in a very precise notion of predictability. Right? Can one implement a program that would get you the output without, in a sort of shortened, squished down algorithm, short program as opposed to a program essentially to get them the output that you're after?
This is very dangerous because it's it does reflect the essential features, but you decide upfront what are the essential features are. Because there might be some tiny thing you're missing.
Yeah, I'm not endorsing that proposal at all as a definition, but I'm just saying that's a view that's out there that hasn't been mentioned in this conversation.
If I understand Alessio correctly, that is, there is this emergence and hierarchy. When you comprehend it, it's a very simple system. Enunciation, we often have, for example, the concept of quasi particles, we have a very messy interacting system. Then, when things emerge, it's a very neat, comprehensible situation. So, that seems to happen at every level. In fact, Einstein's famous quote is that the most incomprehensible thing is that we are able to comprehend the world. So, this, I do not know if that's what you are meaning there. At every level, we get things which are simple imports in the sense we are able to comprehend and to do something new.
Actually, I also need to add something to this because I work a lot with this analog gravity system. So we study all these excitations and potential quantum state in fluids and so forth. And it is true that in some isolated, in some limit, it is very beautiful. We get this nice dispersion relation. But if you take a non uniform background, right, in some cases, things can get really messy.
Exactly. So that's so the bottom is very big. Then you have a hierarchy of new things coming. Things get messy, you have turbulence, then to characterize vertices and
but
those
this
things.
Is already at the linear level, at the level of the perturbation. So, or for example, try to describe sound waves in the presence of vorticity in a rotational flow. If you want to add all this, suddenly, you know, this nice picture you have of sound wave completely breaks down. It's a big mess. And the same is, this is already at the level where, you know, at the linear level, just when the background is a bit more complicated, the dispersion relations are not so easily derived because, you know, you cannot easily do these Fourier transforms anymore.
Sure,
because
but then,
everything is background dependent.
When you look at this turbulent situation, then you have emergence of Kolmogorov scaling laws, for example. So at every level, this nature seems to show something simple to me. And then, of course, you go next level into.
It seems to me that to expect them in a fundamental deals. It seems to me that to expect a fundamental theory to explain things at the level that we observe is just too much. And even, the way I read physicists like Weinberg, when he writes a dream of a final theory, is not that one would be able to explain, these things, but one would have like a list of all the fundamental laws or principles or forces in virtue of which one can build then models and other things. And can explain, and explain here is much softer. I think that at least some of the philosophy that could explain. So I think one has to make this distinction. It's so that there will be different ways in which emergence can fail. One is the maybe that you cannot derive, and it seems to me that that's probably too much to ask for. Otherwise, there won't be such simple principles like, or laws, and they would be less interesting in some sense, or more difficult to work with, maybe not less interesting. But, so there are more guides, and the question is whether there is a the failure of the other emergence and what it means to have the failures of the other emergence. So you have the fundamental laws or theories, or at least, and then you add to them things, and then you see whether you can explain away. I wasn't sure, I mean, what was the view here, because it seems that at least some of the people thought that we can explain like the simple breaking or other according to the softer notion of explaining. But I wasn't sure that it was, I mean, the view of everybody.
All I was trying to do is say that there is a distinction. I think the softer notion you're thinking of is the more liberal notion that I was saying, I think most businesses have.
Yeah.
And that you might have a more restricted and more demanding notion of explanation. And I think that's why a lot of philosophers think that there isn't a notion of explanation of emergent phenomena. And I was saying that I tend to side with physicists.
Yeah.
There's a number of tools that they use which philosophers should be more familiar with. And if they're going to be critical, I think they have to be more careful as to why it is that they think that there's not an explanation being offered. Now, maybe there are some people who will make that argument, but I think that I just wanted to make the distinction clear.
Yeah, I mean, there is one worry that I have, at least, that many times, I mean, or at least the thing that I saw, I don't know much about this, that the models that are used, I mean, from the fundamental theories, sometimes assume things that actually contradict the fundamental theory. And that's kind of, because they use some maybe classical assumptions, for instance, in addition to quantum mechanics, that seems to be against quantum mechanics. I saw, like in the Bose-Einstein conference, I talked with some scientists or some physicists, and they admitted that they go from the classical to the quantum without any problem. They just put the head and take off the head, I mean, back and forth, and they assume like equality, although it seems like that the model itself, I mean, it's not clear that it's consistent. So that's what it seems to be the word.
Yeah, just a clarification about the philosopher's notion of emergence. It's not that the emergent phenomena are unexplained or mysterious in any way. They're emergent if they're not explained entirely in base level terms. And maybe Yossi's exactly right, that's just too much to ask in most cases, except for the very simple kind of aggregate cases. In which case, emergent phenomena are explained, but they require the resources that go beyond the base level, the resources of the upper level theory.
So tell us what you mean by base level, and what the resources of the base level theory are. I mean, that's sort of I think that's the key in what you're calling the philosophical notion of emergence. But I don't really have a good handle on it. I mean, I think I know what you're getting at, but I'm not 100% sure, because, I mean, so if the base level for a finite system like this water in here is just a partition function for the finite number of molecules there, well, then I'm not going to be able to tell a story about phase transitions that might match with that water without
changing. Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so exactly. So that would be an emergent phenomenon.
Right, that's the point.
Yeah, that's, and I would agree. It may be.
But in,
I have a question about role of experiments. If you look at physics, most of the discoveries come from experiment. Most of the new understanding comes from experimental research. For example, very often we write down effective theories or effective Hamiltonian by looking at experiments, systematics, some intuition, and old experience and so on. Now we have a powerful method of analysis, if you look, which can look at a class of problems, some small class of problems. But still, most of the time, whether when people build models in economics or in sociology or in physics, it's from empirical. So do philosophers of science worry about experimental discoveries and how they do that? Because whatever I heard, people are worrying about half of people, namely theorists, how they discover what it means. Do you worry about experimental discoveries in philosophy? I don't know, I'm not asking properly, but.
No, okay. Well, go ahead.
I think the answer is clearly yes. It's just a selection of the philosophers who are here tend to be the philosophers who are interested in looking at the sort of conceptual structure of particular theories, and so they tend to talk more to the theorists. Mm-hmm. And there is, and Leo is somebody who is emphasizing the importance of looking at the experiment to us as we're organizing this conference. And it just turns out that in terms of the types of experiments and condensed matter that we're talking about, I think there aren't many philosophers who've looked at that particular experimental tradition. I think just a sociological fact. There are philosophers who've looked at experiments in other areas and tried to understand how to think through the reasoning involved in that kind of experimental practice. But I don't know that there are that many who have looked at it. I mean, I could be wrong on this, but there's a...
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I sort of tried to suggest in my class that, you know, the values for the various parameters that one gets in the continuum modeling equations are really have to be input by experiment. We need to do experiments in order to determine what they are. So that's a really, from my perspective, really important aspect of what's going on.
We do something which hasn't been described at this meeting. We being condensed matter theorists in particular, also field theorists and particle physics. We make what we call self-consistent assumptions. That is, we assume something, maybe derived from experiment, and then we see it come out of our result. This is something that would, and then we call it an explanation. That was something that would horrify a mathematician and might equally horrify a philosopher, but we do it all the time because we often have the backup of the experiment or of the simulation to tell us that we're not doing entirely the wrong thing.
Yeah, I'm slightly ill at ease because for me, physicists, in the 18th century, physicists were part of natural philosophy. So, I mean, so what distinguishes now physicists from someone else? Physics is a job, and it has a specific approach of nature. So there's no bound to physics. You can study the universe, or you can study bacteria or something. But the technique is specific to and the requirements of physics, or the ethics of physics, is a little bit specific. It goes through experiments, it goes through modeling, it goes through mathematization, which doesn't impose itself to other branches of knowledge, like biology. So in biology, the approach, the technique, is different. So I think that's the reason for which, in physics, I agree with you that the emergent phenomenon are linked with simplicity, because it's our job also to find simplicity in the emergent phenomenon. For us, the most exciting situation is when we do recover some universality and some simplicity. So that's the best. But a biologist wouldn't have the same idea. For him, the description of life with the whole complexity of it is much more important. So it's not, I think this the discussion here is a little bit biased and by the fact that we're physicists. And I'm a little bit surprised because I thought, let's say, in a way, the philosopher found here been felt obliged to be limited to physics, and I think it's a pity. You know, I would have liked to hear them
sort of extrapolate a little bit more or get out of this, you know.
Because if the philosopher, because you see, in physics we are limited by what we can do,
what we can do experimentally is very limited. What we can do theoretically is limited by mathematics, available mathematics. And philosophers don't necessarily have the same limitations. So they can go a little bit ahead sometimes.
But I think we're also limited about what we can talk about intelligently. So if we want to talk about something in physics, then we better know a little bit about that. And so we're not physicists, so or we're not working in physics, so we have to read and try and understand. So if we started pronouncing on everything, then nobody would listen to us because, yeah.
Plus, this is the Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics.
This notion that simplicity is engineered is a bit intriguing, but if this is mentioned at this meeting, since I couldn't go to all of it, I apologize, but is it meaningful to say we have an explanation of something if the simplest representation of a system is the system? I think of the weather, for example. It sure would be nice to know what the weather's going to be on June 12th next year. I could make a plan for a holiday or whether or not I cut my lawn, but I think most people in this room would agree that that's not going to happen anytime soon. And it seems reasonably likely that we're never going to be able to do better than predict large-scale features of the weather over relatively short timescales, or maybe very broad features like climate over long scales. Weather is clearly, it seems to me, an emergent phenomenon, yet can we honestly say we have any good explanation of it in terms of understanding? We just model it, but I don't know that I'd regard that as an explanation. I'm wondering what the philosophers might think of this, or maybe the scientists. Maybe they'll say, oh, Rob, you just give up too easily, but I'm not real optimistic that the weather could ever be, we're ever going to have a representation of the weather that's simpler than just letting the weather happen.
Probably we know some scaling laws about weather very well.
Pardon me?
Probably we know about some scaling laws about very well.
There's a few things. I think climate. I'm distinguishing weather from climate. I want to know what the weather's going to be like June 12th next year. Sure would be convenient, and I bet all of us would agree with that. But I know realistically it's never going to happen. The probability is I'm probably going to quantum tunnel out of this building before that happens. I don't know. But then do we really understand the weather? Or maybe we just get stuck. There is no more funding. There's nothing better we can do. This seems to me to be a realistic scientific possibility. Pessimistic, though that may sound.
But that actually brings us to another thing which somehow was missing from the discussion of what is the true emergence. Actually, I think Lee's distinction on strict economy between states and laws is actually relevant. When we have our original fundamental lower level system, and then we do some funny business with this Hamiltonian Lagrangian, and then it emerges. On one hand, we get new laws. And another one, what we call new phenomena consists actually of two things. We get new laws, okay, start from the molecule to Navier-Stokes to weather. And another thing is states, which are predictions. And we may not get the states, but we might get the laws.
Well, we might, but I'm not, actually, I'm just,
maybe
we know the laws undergirding the weather.
Yeah,
it's not.
So maybe actually it also brings us to another possibility to look at emergence, not necessarily as a surprise, because even if classical mechanics is emergent from quantum mechanics, its predictions are not surprising for obvious reasons. But emergence is, let's say, indirect prediction. So we don't derive states and phenomena directly from the underlying theory, but what we do, we get new laws which are derived from them. Whether it's a randomization group or all the Hamiltonians all the way down as in Philip Stamp's talk. And from those new laws, we get the predictions which otherwise we wouldn't be able to reach the rest.
So is there a consensus that is forming in that case? I wouldn't agree that if you can predict this emergent feature from the macroscopic model, then it's not emergent?
It's plenty of models that are exactly solvable
and
that
emergent phenomena that are exactly solvable. Often, you know, you cannot predict breaking with symmetry, but sometimes you can, right? Well, and then because of breaking with symmetry, you have an emergent phenomenon that you can have. Magnetism is not a property of the Hermite point, it's a property of the state. Well, but sometimes you can do it. There are models that are exactly solvable and a feature of this emergent phenomenon. So I don't understand the relationship between derivability, explainability, calculability, and the emergence. It seems to me that, for instance, like Nigel said, something I don't know if it's in the audience, that is an interesting definition for me, that this emergence frame is multi-stability. So at some level, you have, instead of one possible state, you have many. So the following graphic example, again, is the breaking of symmetry. This may have or not to do with if you're able to derive it from the microscopic model.
So
I want to add a tiny thing about the weather. Well, I of course agree absolutely with what was said about the weather, except that I would also add that within our lifetimes, the older people here in this room, a much better understanding of the weather has emerged. In particular, due to the work of Ed Lorenz, published in 60-something or other, we understand that the behavior of the weather can be, in an analog way, understood as separations of orbit in some phase space and exponential separation. So here is an example in which some understanding emerged, but not the whole story. And it's interesting to ask whether in each of these cases we might want to expect emergent features even if a fully predictive explanation is not available.
So we are actually over time, and I don't know, but that's probably a good time to end since we're past the deadline. And I just want to thank everybody personally for coming in. Teaching me an awful lot. I had a good time.